here's what's coming up on the program. I am more than honored to be able to be speaking with Gordon Haberman today, who's going to join me in just a few minutes. Gordon lost his daughter, Andrea, on 9/11 when the North Tower came down. Some Washington County leaders and some folks who are working on a 9/11 memorial here in Wisconsin held a press conference today to announce movement in the direction of making the 9/11 memorial in Wisconsin even more meaningful by dedicating the highway leading to that memorial as the 9/11 Memorial Highway. Why? In honor of Andrea. We're going to talk about that coming up on the program. We'll talk a bit more about 9/11, in fact, quite a bit more about 9/11, as various remembrances continue throughout the day. And at least people in my generation and older than my generation are wondering today openly what happened to American unity. So we'll be talking about that on the program as well. Let's see. Before we get to anything on the show, we had two more winners in the iHeartRadio Music Festival Flyaway Contest. Two more today. Both of them winners on our Milwaukee radio station, WISN. I say that because we also have Madison listeners joining us on my program now. Congratulations to Danielle Gallinati of Milwaukee. She was listening to the Jay Weber Show at 8 a.m. And we don't have the name of the winner who was listening to the Rush Limbaugh Show, who also was able to text and win a trip for two to the iHeartRadio Music Festival in Las Vegas, September 20th and 21st. You have only a few more opportunities to try to win this contest. The contest ends on Friday. So here is your word this hour for your next chance to try to win. The word is Viva. V as in Vicky. I as in the second letter in my name. V as in Vicky. A. Viva. Text the word Viva to the number 200-200 for your chance to win a trip for two to the iHeartRadio Music Festival in Las Vegas. It includes round-trip airfare for two, transportation to and from the show, tickets to the show, obviously, hotel accommodations, and $1,000 in spending cash. If you win this contest, you will qualify to have your name entered in a grand prize drawing. The grand prize includes major upgrades, people, first-class airfare. Park MGM is going to be your hotel accommodations. You'll get $10,000 in spending cash, backstage passes, front row seats. Wouldn't that be awesome? But you have to win this hour's contest in order to qualify for that grand prize. So you know your word. The word is Viva. The number is 200-200. Remember, if you play the contest, you'll receive a confirmation text from iHeartRadio. You'll receive additional texts from iHeartRadio. This is a nationwide contest, so it's really cool that we've had 14 winners from Wisconsin. Standard data and message rates apply. Standard data and message rates apply. See what else coming up on the program. My pal Judge Jim Troupas is going to join me on the show. Kimberly Guilfoyle as well will be on the program a little bit later on in the program. But as I had mentioned earlier, Gordon Haberman is going to join me. He was just part of the press event today at the Wisconsin Capitol, not only announcing the groundbreaking and pending completion of the 9/11 memorial in Kewaskum, but also the announcement that Washington County area lawmakers have introduced legislation designating a highway leading up to the memorial, the 9/11 Memorial Highway. We're going to check in with people on that particular issue and specifically with Mr. Gordon Haberman, who lost his daughter on 9/11 18 years ago. That's all ahead on the Vicki McKenna Show. I will be right back. Families of Wisconsin residents killed during 9/11, on 9/11, and in the wake of 9/11, unveiled a proposal today to dedicate a portion of State Highway 28 between Interstate 41 and Dodge County and Highway 144 in Washington County as the 9/11 Memorial Highway. It would require, you know, the State Department of Transportation to place signs, you know, maintain this road. So this is a bill that is being circulated. It's meant to lead to the 9/11 Memorial. The 9/11 Memorial, which actually features a piece of the North Tower, broke ground in June. The completion of that memorial, as I understand, is expected to be done sometime in October. One of the main reasons why that memorial exists is Gordon Haberman. He's on the phone with me right now. He was at today's press conference to talk about what 9/11 means to you, Gordon, because it probably means something to you different than it means to the rest of us. I'm going to quote Andrew Johnson here. It was a one-day event for the rest of you. 9/11 for the Habermans and for the Johnsons is every day. Every day we wake up and we think about this. Thank you for being on the program, Gordon.
Thank you, Becky. Great to talk with you.
Great to have you on the show. So that is probably, that is a difference that I can't quite contemplate myself. Because for me, it was watching the events unfold on television. For you, it was wondering what happened to your daughter. If you don't mind just sort of walking people through Andrea,
sure.
What she was like and what she was in, and how she found herself on a plane to New York City, and how ultimately this all came to pass, that on 9/11 you were going to become one of the 9/11 families.
Yes. Andrea was 25 at the time and employee of assistant to the president of a company called Car Futures based out of Chicago. She was scheduled to be in New York for 3 days. And they were actually in the process of closing down their energy desks. And as a lot of brokerage firms were doing at that time. And she was going to be there for 3 days, assisting her boss in doing so. And got into New York at about midnight on Monday night, first business trip of her career, on the night of the 10th, and showed up to work a bit early that morning. We went into the North Tower at approximately 8 in the morning. Car's offices were on the 92nd floor of the North Tower. And no one from the 92nd floor on up lived in the North Tower, lived from the North Tower. And if you were on the 91st and on down, you wanted to get out, you had time to do so. So all perished from her floor.
Wow.
All were alive at car offices. They were desperately trying to get down. And
they were blocked from getting down. Were they blocked from getting down from the rubble and
I had interviewed in 2003. There were two electricians that were working on the 91st floor ceiling wiring. And when the plane hit, they were knocked feet away from their ladders. But they did try to get up to the 92nd floor, and all three stairways were packed with debris and concrete and rubble. As the plane that hit the North Tower came in a little bit on an angle, clipped the 93rd floor and 94th floor. So, of course, we knew none of that at the time, but we do know now that they were all alive. She was on the phone with a co-worker in Chicago describing her view of the Statue of Liberty, which put her on the southeast corner of the North Tower. The plane came in from the opposite side. Of that floor, and then the phone lines went dead. However, the last phone call out of the North Tower came from a car employee about a minute before the towers collapsed.
What was Andrea like? I read that she was recently engaged. I read that she was kind of excited to start her life.
She was one of our two bright lights, the other being her daughter, Julie, and she was intelligent, funny, shy. graduated Kewaskum High School with honors, went on to do the same at St. Norbert College in Kapir here, where she met her fiance, who is from Illinois. And just a week before she was killed, they had finalized all the plans for their wedding, which was take place in October 2000, September 2002. So she had an incredibly bright future ahead of her, not only personally, but Car Futures was sending her for various broker licenses at levels, and there was talk about sending her to Northwestern to get her law degree. So, for 25 years old, she kind of had a tremendous life map ahead of her.
Yeah.
And, thus, Andy was, my wife and I, half of our, I guess.
Let me ask.
I guess I call it measure of success of a parent. We are extremely proud of both of our children.
Let me ask something that I read in the Mike Nichols book. Nichols had, from Milwaukee, a Milwaukee writer, he's actually been on the show before, had a book called Just a Few Sleeps Away, A Family's Discovery of Good and Evil in the Aftermath of 9/11. By the way, you can, folks, you can still get this book. He talked to you in the book, and he said he describes you being apprehensive about Andrea going to New York, that you had some, you know, you had a feeling. Can you describe the feeling you had and what you thought gave you that feeling?
Well, she was scared also, both of us. At the first, after the first World Trade Center bombing, she had written a paper for school on the rights of man and the inhumanity of man to other people. How could people just go to work and have their lives disrupted by hate? And it affected her a lot. And I didn't know she was going into the towers until they spent Labor Day that year with us up at the house, again, finalizing wedding plans and so on. And it wasn't until the day she was going to leave that I found out she was going to the towers. I knew she was going to trip to New York, but Car Futures has an office at Midtown, Manhattan, and that's when I thought that she was going to. And, you know, I think we both had a chill on, when I found out it was going to be the North Tower.
Gordon, did you think that, were you just afraid because Andrea was afraid, because you were worried about your daughter who was going to experience, or were you, or did you feel something?
And that it had impacted her years before.
Yeah.
And so, however, we got through that. She headed back to Chicago for that week, and the day that she was delayed, Monday, her flight was delayed, and then it was delayed the second time, and then delayed the third time, and because of the weather out in New York. And she had called us at the restaurant and said, why don't you just go out in the morning with her boss? And, you know, typical young girl. Well, all my makeup and everything and my luggage is already on its way. If I can get out tonight, I'm going to get out. So she got out, and that's why she got in so late.
So you're telling me, Gordon, that she could have missed a flight, flown out the next morning, and may have been late for a meeting, but may have missed 9/11.
Yes. In
addition, Gordon.
In addition, she had switched with another girl to go out 2 weeks early. In other words, she took another girl's spot to fly out on September 10th, where she was normally scheduled, I think it was for October 1st. And her reason on that is that there were some other wedding-related things that they were wanting to do that weekend. So, yeah. Typical of Andrea's work ethic, that's all of these people were doing that day is going to work. She showed up a bit early at the Trade Center and found herself on the 92nd floor.
You said that your daughter wrote a paper about the inhumanity of man and the you know, how hate could have brought people to just, you know, randomly attack someone, you know, frankly, just for being different and innocent people. And then, you know, in epic, tragic proportion, she experienced that inhumanity of man. Explain or share with people, if you don't mind, your thoughts about the inhumanity of man as you encountered the people, the first responders, the searchers, the people who tried to make the best of this in the aftermath as you tried to find Andrea.
Oh my goodness, I consider ourselves and our family blessed in the experiences that we encountered. Not only it started back home in Pewaskum here in Farmington. However, we now have a whole New York family, and it's made up of Ground Zero workers, iron workers, cops, firefighters, EMTs, first responders. That they put their arms around us in New York, and we have associations that there's so much good out there, Vicki, and sense of history, sense of what was happening was not lost. You just had to separate the mechanics of 9/11 from the experiences that you were actually having. So we have a whole family out in New York City now that, quite frankly, we couldn't have made it without their assistance, without their help. And I talked to two of my friends who are both dying of cancer from their exposure to the toxins down at Ground Zero. You know, but both of them felt regret what they did. And they were all volunteers down there. They were searching for pieces of people for the families. And this country I've learned, Vicki, what it is to be an American, of the goodness that our country is capable of the kindness and compassion that we're capable of, and the ideals that this country stands for. You mentioned Andrew Johnson earlier. My goodness, Andrew Johnson, son of David, enlisted in the Army because of 9/11. And he was killed in Kandahar province in January of 2012. That's 11 years after 9/11.
Wow.
The commitment of our young people to answer the call. I mentioned in my talk this morning, very few Wisconsinites know it, or they don't follow it anymore, or they're not interested anymore. 400 young men from Eau Claire, Wisconsin are now in duty in Afghanistan. My goodness, 18 years later. And I fear we've entered into a period of endless war. I've attended Al-Qaeda trials. I've been down to Guantanamo for four different occasions, attended hearings against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the four other defendants on trial for the bombing or the planning and execution of the 9/11 plot. I was out, and we're facing an enemy that we don't understand because it's so foreign for Americans to understand that type of hatred. And people ask why they kill us. I don't even bother wondering why they kill us anymore. The fact of the matter is that they're going to try and do it. And my goodness, when you think of the effect of 9/11 and the cost of human life, American lives, and us, almost 7,000 of our servicemen have been killed, 52,000 injured, 22 a day are committing suicide. And we're going to face this enemy for a long time. So the idea of the memorial in Pewaskum is it's a dichotomy. It will honor certainly the victims of 9/11, but it will also celebrate what it is to be an American, the importance of community, the importance of family, the importance of compassion. And 18 years on now, thankfully, young people can have no conscious recollection of 9/11. But what I found about is that all of them know the images of 9/11, the terrible images of 9/11. But they don't understand what happened afterwards and how our country changed, but how also our company responded with goodness and kindness and unity. And I want that message to come across in this memorial. So the idea of the memorial started in, well, they recovered Andrea's purse and phone, wallet, clutch purse, glasses in 2004. And I had these at home, and by that time I had begun making friends with the future people who would be putting up the proposed museum and the plaza. And we were out there in 2010, and Kathy and I were making the presentation of these artifacts of Andrea's to the future museum, and we're acquainted that certain pieces of artifacts from the towers were being released for memorials across the country. and came back home and brought this up to the village administrator of Kewaskum and two of Andrea's former high school teachers. That set in motion a series of events, of which 2014 we obtained a piece of feed from Port Authority of New York, New Jersey. And from that point, that's how they designed a memorial camp. And,
Gordon?
I
don't want to have to end this. I really don't, but I'm actually looking at my time here.
Sure.
I do want to know, when is the memorial? Do you know when the memorial officially will be open, so that people around Wisconsin can go, can learn about Andrea, can learn about how wonderful she was? When can they go see it?
Well, right now it's a construction zone, and we're projecting total completion of the project by certainly for the anniversary next year. However, hopefully that will be earlier. And our website, Wisconsin 911memorial.com, we're updating that with the progress and starting to shape up. It's very exciting.
Gordon Haberman, I can't thank you enough. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being on my show.
Thank you.
Oh, people have to, we have to go to commercials. I have to pay bills. This is the Nikki McKenna Show. I'll be right back. Would have let Gordon be on this program for another 2 hours, but I had to pay bills. It's a commercial radio station. Thank you to our advertisers, by the way, so for supporting us. As I'm listening to Gordon Haberman, and over the last 18 years, I've had the privilege of talking to a handful of people, not a lot, who directly experienced 9/11 by losing someone they loved. That should be what we discuss on this day. Just let people who lost everything, let them tell the story. It shouldn't be about partisan politics. It should. I mean, how did it get 18 years later to the point where, you know, you've got Ilhan Omar saying some people did some things? New York Post, by the way, is featuring the father of a 9/11 victim, just taking it to Ilhan Omar for some people did some things. I mean, 18 years later, I guess, is such a long period of time that we're now at some people did some things. New York Times is being reported. The New York Times. It is being reported today that the New York Times headline said, airplanes killed thousands on 9/11. Airplanes. It's New York. Airplanes killed thousands on 9/11. Forgets to mention the Islamic hijackers responsible for murdering 2,977 people. And then go to the University of Wisconsin. The University of Wisconsin posts a post up on its Facebook page talking about the 9/11 memorial in Bascom Hill. At the University of Wisconsin. Thank you to the students of the College Republicans and the College Democrats as they proudly post 2,996 flags fly at Bascom Hill to remember and honor those who lost their lives 18 years ago on September 11th, 2001. 2,977 people were murdered by 19 terrorists. 2,996 is the number that would include the terrorists. Someone at the University of Wisconsin decided to add the terrorists to the list of those we honor with American flags. Stop this. Stop. Millions of people remember 9/11. Some people remember it profoundly. Stop. Stop doing this. 2,977 people died. Not 2,996. Not unless you want to count the terrorists among the victims of 9/11. Stop, please. Ilhan Omar. Some people did some things. Stop this. And because there are a small group of people that won't stop. Is I was listening to Gordon talk about his daughter writing a piece on the inhumanity of man and men being and people being motivated by hate to murder innocent people. I thought to myself, on this one day, we can consider the inhumanity of man and the fact that there are people who, for no reason, just motivated by hate, will murder thousands of people. And for those small group of people, that small group of people that have an outsized voice in the media, that have an outsized amount of power in politics, Ilhan Omar has an outsized amount of power in politics. I don't know why, but she has an outsized amount of power. She is captured. She and the rest of the hard left, American-hating progressives, have captured the entire narrative of the Democratic Party. I don't. Maybe this is a pipe dream. I want to go back to the days where, at least on 9/11. Democrats and Republicans, for reasons only explained by we are all Americans, would come together and recognize that there are certain things we agree on. And that when someone says some people did some things describing in our lifetimes, you know, forgive me for people who have actually lived through the Vietnam War and maybe some folks out there who lived through World War II as well. But in my generation, it is the most profound and earth-shattering experience of our entire history. In my generation, Generation X, my generation. Can we just all agree that it wasn't some people who did some things, that we have enemies. They still hate us. We're still in Afghanistan. There are still people volunteering to serve 18 years later to fight the same enemies who attacked us and murdered 2,977 people, including an innocent girl from Kewaskum who had a bright future ahead of her and a fiance and was planning her wedding when her life was cut short by people motivated solely by their hatred of this nation. And when someone within the confines of this country, someone who is an elected official, when someone has the audacity to dismiss all of that with some people did some things, it should be automatic that the entire country stands up and says, sit down and shut up. But we didn't do that. We didn't do that. 18 years later, I guess, is just too long of a time to be able as a nation to tell Ilhan Omar to stuff it. And to the folks who decided to add the terrorists, adding the terrorists to the memorial at Bascom Hill, same goes for you. And we should be able to, as a nation, a mere 18 years later, still be able to do that. All of us together, Democrats, Republicans, liberals and conservatives, communists and libertarians. Have a great day. I got to take a break here. If you're still listening on WISN, Mark Belling comes up right after the top of the hour, and I will continue with my program on the Madison side right after the news.
The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff. Broadcasting live from Planet Madison, where everything is beyond parody. This is the Vicki McKenna Show. To be a part of the program, in Madison, call 321-1310. Statewide, call toll-free at 877-235-1310. or email Vicki at WIBA.com. Now, here's Vicki McKenna.
Welcome back to the Vicki McKenna Show, hour number two. We're going to get in touch with Jed Babin here. Jim Troupas is going to be on the program a little bit later on. Kimberly Guilfoyle will also join me on the show. She's actually going to be in Madison, so we'll be checking in with Kimberly on the program. So let's just look ahead at the program. Stick around for that. I wanted to get back to a story I referenced last hour, and that was the University of Wisconsin-Madison putting up a post on its Facebook page about a 9/11 memorial in Bascom Hill. And I'm for the memorial. Let me just say straight up, I'm for the memorial. They proudly proclaimed that University of Wisconsin College Democrats and the University of Wisconsin College Republicans got together to do this memorial. What I'd like to have is an answer to the question, how many flags are at the memorial? Here's why I'm asking the question. Let me be very specific and explain what's going on. When the University of Wisconsin put up its post announcing the memorial, it's just small flags on Bascom Hill. The University of Wisconsin indicated that there were 2,996 flags. 2,996 flags. There were 2,977 victims of 9/11. How do you get to 2,996? You get there if you add the terrorists to the list of victims of 9/11. I want to know whether the University of Wisconsin put up 2,977 flags and just made a Google error when they put up the Facebook post, or whether or not they put up 2,996 flags, meaning that there were 19 American flags planted on Bascom Hill to remember the terrorists. Just I asked, you know, whether that was the case on their Facebook page. I put up a post myself, and instead of answering the question, they just changed the headline. So from 2,996 flags fill Bascom Hill to remember and honor those who lost their lives 18 years ago, today on September 11th, 2001, Wisconsin will never forget. That has now been changed to thousands of flags fill Bascom Hill to remember and honor those who lost their lives 18 years ago, today on September 11th, 2001, Wisconsin will never forget. Please answer the question, University of Wisconsin. I've put it out there on Twitter. I've asked them on Facebook. How many flags are on Bascom Hill? And if there are 19 flags, American flags, remembering the 19 hijackers who murdered 2,977 people, and if you heard my segment with Gordon Haberman, were responsible for thousands more injuries, including people who are now dying of cancer thanks to exposure to toxic fumes at Ground Zero, the 7,000 who gave their lives in service to this country in the war on terror, and the 52,000 who are still deployed, or the 22 people per day who commit suicide related to either post-traumatic stress or other stress because of 9/11. Please tell me if there are 19 flags, American flags, honoring people who are responsible for this much death, destruction, and misery. Please, just tell me. And if there are, and it was by mistake, I reckon that it could be by mistake. Maybe you Googled it wrong. Just take 19 flags off the display. If you did put up 2,996 flags and you did it in error because somebody just Googled 9/11 deaths and you didn't look any deeper than the blur before you actually had to click on the article, okay. Go take those 19 flags down. Because the 19 hijackers who created the cascade that has gotten us 18 years later to still have people dying related to the attacks on this nation on September 11th, 2001. Take those flags down. 19 hijackers don't deserve to be honored with American flags at a memorial on Bascom Hill. Jed Babin is going to join me in just a moment. Still ahead, Jim Troupas as well will be on the program. Kimberly Guilfoyle will join me on the show as well a bit later on the program. We'll be right back. That I got from the University of Wisconsin on their Twitter account at UW-Madison when I asked, what's going on with this number, 2,996? Nothing. I didn't get an explanation. I got, we're proud of student Democrats, Republicans, and veterans who came together to organize this tribute. It's intended to honor the innocent victims and heroic responders who lost their lives on 9/11. Well, then how is adding 19 terrorists to the list of victims a way to honor innocent victims and heroic responders who lost their lives on 9/11? I mean, that's why would you add the terrorists to the list? I'm University of Wisconsin. Please explain how adding the terrorists to the list and honoring them with 19 American flags is a way to honor innocent victims and heroic responders who lost their lives on 9/11. Before we get to some other things, I've got Jed Babin on the program of the Washington Times. Often you'll also see his writing at the American Spectator, the former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense under the first Bush administration. Welcome to the program. I've been sharing this with you throughout the afternoon. I mean, how do you get to 2,996 unless you're adding terrorists?
You don't.
You don't.
And that's really the point. These people are disrespecting the flag. They're disrespecting the lives, all those lives lost on 9/11, by including the terrorists in this number. You know, it is absolutely despicable for them to do that. And somebody ought to just raise holy hell and demand an explanation, and demand that they reduce the number.
Yeah.
Just demand it.
Don't just change the headline. They changed the headline to thousands.
Change their action.
Change the action. Get rid of 19 flags, because I'm pretty sure that the veterans, and even I'm not even going to dump on the college Democrats, the veterans, the college Republicans, and even the college Democrats probably didn't know the actual number, I'm guessing. Most people off the top of their head don't come up with 2,977. This was something that looks like, since it was officially publicized by the University of Wisconsin, it may have been organized by the University of Wisconsin, people associated with the administration, either in student affairs or something, student life or something. You know, did someone take these young people at the UW for a ride, you know, get them to, you know, to come together and to try to do something to show unity, only to have the last laugh by adding the terrorists to the people we honor with American flags? I mean, come on. Stop doing this stuff.
It's inexplicable. It's despicable. And whoever was responsible for it, I mean, you can't fire students. Well, maybe you can expel them. That'd probably be a good idea. And what about the administrators, the people in the college bureaucracy who permitted this knowingly? They ought to be fired.
They won't.
But it'll
be.
Never happen, Vicky.
No, because I'm the only one who's ticked off about it. You know, they're not. Me and the folks who also notice this. You know, I wasn't the only one who noticed this, but we're the ones who are ticked off about it, and we don't matter. And so you can say that it's okay to honor terrorists. And that's just a way that we show, I guess, American unity. You know, I was just talking with a man who lost his daughter. He's from Wisconsin. He lost his daughter in the North Tower, Jed. And he gave me some numbers here that we are 7,000 U.S. service personnel lost to the fight that basically is 9/11, only so many years later. 52,000 still serving, 22 suicides a day, 400 people from Eau Claire. Have been deployed to Afghanistan, a war that doesn't seem to have any end whatsoever. All of this is because of what happened 18 years ago.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got special forces stationed in roughly 80 countries around the world fighting this fight. You know, the special forces guys take, I think there's something like 2 or 3% of the total manpower in the American military. They're taking 60% of the casualties. You know, we dare to forget this. We dare to forget the debt we owe these people. That itself is despicable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't forget, and I sure don't forgive the people or the people who helped commit them, enable them to commit this attack.
You know, I saw, alas, The New York Times, you would not think you would see this in the New York Times, claiming that, quote, airplanes killed thousands of people in 9/11. Airplanes. No, airplanes.
Airplanes. Oh, sure.
Okay.
Guns kill people. Spoons make people fat.
Right.
I know.
Airplanes kill people. We don't mention Islamo-terrorists, Islamic terrorists. We don't mention any of that any longer. In fact, we're so post-truth that, you know, we think the Taliban can be negotiated with to a peace agreement, Jed. We think that we're going to negotiate a peace agreement with the Taliban. This is now, what, the third presidential administration that has deluded itself into thinking we can negotiate peace with the Taliban? How about we just make sure we kill those guys if they are organizing operations against us or our allies?
Well, yeah. I mean, President Trump, one of the dumbest things he's done since he's been president is to arrange that so-called summit with the Taliban. I mean, we don't even know if the slugs that they were inviting to the summit have any command and control over the Taliban. They may not even have the power to negotiate anything. And the fact of the matter is, why are we negotiating at all at any level, far less the presidential level? We don't even have a ceasefire. These guys killed four U.S. troops, I think, within the past 2 weeks. So why are we even negotiating with them at all? It's a great mistake. And you know what? Everybody talks about, well, the art of the deal, and let's go away from diplomatic norms. Fine. You want to go away from diplomatic norms? Let's talk about the art of the deal. If you're going to make a deal, you use the leverage you have. You use the leverage you have to set up the negotiation. It's like settling a lawsuit, making a business deal. You use the leverage you have. You make the other guy come to you. And that's the point. We're going to them. We're saying, oh, gee, would you please give us a peace treaty, even though it's going to say we're basically surrendering. You know, I frankly, at this point, think we need to, and we've talked about this many times, you need to get the hell out of Afghanistan. But when you get the ground troops out, you leave back behind a lot of air power, a lot of special forces, and a lot of intelligence, so that whenever these guys get to the idea that they're going to band together to form another attack against the United States,
right,
we go in and whack them. We go in and whack them every damn day. And we may have to do that forever, Vicky. We may never get out of Afghanistan. If we're going to handle it right, we probably won't.
Peace in Afghanistan, that seems to be...
Ain't going to happen.
Please. Peace in Afghanistan is not something that we're going to negotiate. And to your point, you don't ask to sit down. You don't say, oh, come on over. We would surely love to negotiate peace with you. Because these are people, and in fact, you know, if you recall back to the passage of the Afghan Constitution essentially was probably heralded and cheerled by all kinds of Islamo-fascists who would like to destroy Western civilization, because it essentially enshrined in it what amounted to a declaration of Sharia law. So, why do we think that we can even create something that could be peace when you've got a constitution that essentially says pretty much what the Taliban believes?
Well, I mean, why is the president even thinking that he can negotiate with these people? I mean, again, it really comes down to, it's not we who are trying to negotiate with him. It's him. What the hell is he thinking? And for the life of me, I can't understand.
Well, happily, the negotiation was called off. The question is, why was it called in the first place? Let's get to the departure of John Bolton, if you don't mind, Jed.
Sure.
You know, we spent, let's see, we've already been about 18 hours on, was he fired, did he quit? I don't care about that. What is the vacancy, the hole left by John Bolton, mean for what our policy looks like vis-a-vis Russia, Iran, North Korea, the Middle East?
Well, I think that John was probably a leavening factor. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, he's just a neocon, he's a wild man, he's a war hawk. Well, I know John Bolton. He is not that. Yes, he's a bit of a neocon. Yes, he's an interventionist. But if you have a president who wants to meet with the Taliban, who cozies up to Vladimir Putin all the time, you know, John was a leavening factor to try to get Trump back on track with some of the things that really represent America's interests. Now, Mike Pompeo, I think, you know, one rumor that's going around is that he might pull a Kissinger and be Secretary of State and National Security Advisor at the same time. Maybe that would be a good thing. There are other people out there who could replace John. But I think at this point, we lose a lot when we lose John Bolton, because he's one of the people with a very clear understanding of what we're up against and with a very clear understanding of what America's interests are. Mr. Trump doesn't always have that clarity of vision and understanding.
It wasn't that Bolton was going to drive the Trump administration into, you know, into a nation-building exercise. That wasn't, you know, folks were suggesting that his presence in the Trump administration meant something similar to that. But to have that leavening factor when the president's inclination, at least in some regard, is to sit down with our enemies. And it's fine if you're sitting down with your enemy in a business deal, because, you know, then you're hopeful to get something out of your enemy and not have to give anything to your enemy. But we're talking about people who want to destroy us. We're talking about Russia. They would like to get together with China and North Korea and Iran and it pretty much put us out of the running in terms of global superpowers if they can. They'd like to see that happen. They'd like to have world hegemony. I don't see how you're going to negotiate someone out of that inclination when global power is their goal. Global power should be our goal, and everything that we do should be about making sure that we are on top of the heap here. And I don't necessarily, I mean, I see better than I saw in the Obama administration, but I don't necessarily see that as a motivating factor.
No, and again, I think, you know, President Trump is doing an awful lot of good. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to vote for him again next year because the other prospects are so horrible. But the fact of the matter is, he does not have the understanding of what America's interests really are. And I think he assumes, like a lot of Republicans think, that we're going to be on the top of the rung, the top of the food chain forever. And it's just going to come automatically. It doesn't. You know, as the man said, freedom isn't free. And we have to fight for what we have. We have to represent ourselves better. We have to use our leverage around the world.
He gets it with China. You know? He gets it with China.
He doesn't. He doesn't really. And he doesn't get it with North Korea.
It does seem like he gets it with China, because he actually knows how to use force at the very least to try, because he recognizes that China's not just going to be nice.
Well, that's true, but he's not using force, and I'm pretty sure he shouldn't against China. He's pushing them very hard on trade. But the fact of the matter is, when this guy goes out there and says, well, Kim Jong-un and I have fallen in love, when he cozies up to Putin, you know, when you're trying to lead your allies, you know, we're always bashing our allies and probably with great justification for not supporting NATO. Well, and, you know, Trump is out there saying, hey, Putin's a great guy. You know, he's one of my favorite people. And, you know, what do the allies take from that? Yeah, okay, Russia's cool. We don't need to worry about Russia anymore. So Trump is making big mistakes. And I think John Bolton was helping him make fewer of those mistakes. I think that at this point, we're going to see a lot more mistakes made because John Bolton is not there to stop them.
Well, I hope you're wrong. When I say force, by the way, regarding China, I meant trade. I meant the force on
trade.
Yeah. I didn't mean military force or anything like that. Do you think Pompeo could do the job?
Probably. There's other people out there who could do it too. My old friend, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, who's now the ambassador to the Netherlands, could do it. They're saying Richard Grenell, the ambassador to Germany, might be able to do it. I don't know. There's a lot of people who could fill those shoes, but that's not the question. Is the president going to listen to those people? Is he going to trust them? Is that person who replaces Bolton going to have the same sort of positive influence in restraining Trump from doing stupid stuff?
Jed Babin, as always, you emptied out my glass again. You know that, right? I had a half full glass, completely empty now. Thank you.
Sorry, that's kind of what I do.
It's what you do. Jed Babin, you can find Jed Babin's writing. Jed, where's your latest piece so that we direct people to the hottest, hot off the press stuff?
Spectator.org. Appeared yesterday or Monday. Yep. Today's Wednesday already. I'm still to the point, Vicki, I can hardly remember what I wrote and when.
You know what I think you should do?
The latest is,
I think you should go grab a drink, because it's got to be happy hour somewhere in the world. That's what I think.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
You know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Thanks, Jed. Jed Babin, spectator.org is where you can find Jed's latest. We are going to take a quick break here on the Vicki McKenna Show. Let's go. Dave. Let me give you the nod before you make the mics hot there. That almost was bad, people. I was this close to letting a profanity slip there. Woo! Welcome back to the Vicki McKenna Show. That was almost a hot mic comment. Woo. Okay. Jim Troupas is in my studio gaveling us into session on a bottle of wine, which I think is nice. I mean, better than a wooden gavel on a wooden block. How about what amounts to a pen on the side of a bottle of wine?
That's a tire pressure gauge.
You got it. Thank you, Jim Troupas, for coming in on the program today. I have in my hand a... say this for me.
Muscafarello.
Muscafarello 2017 wild fermented wine from your family's winery in Greece.
Troupas Winery, yes.
What does wild fermented mean?
Well, it just means there's zero added to it. So there's you don't see any wines like this. I know of none in the United States. Now, somebody's going to call and say, oh, there's a bunch of them. So wine will be created in ancient times with or without additions of sugar. You know, we add sugar to ferment it more quickly, even the best wines. This is none of that. So it is a pure wine. It is what grandma would have made. It's what the Spartans would have made, because this is from the Spartan region of the Peloponnesus. And they would have made it with exactly the same grape. The Muscafarello grape goes back to ancient times, and the vineyard decided they'd try this. And there are others. I understand there are others that are unfiltered.
It's becoming a thing. I've just popped up a wine blog.
There you go.
Called Wine Folly. What's up with wild fermentation? It says here, a wild fermented wine uses native yeasts that are found on the fruit and in the vineyard. Yes. So nothing is being added. These are native yeasts on the fruit and found within the vineyard itself.
A good way to think about it is if you went to the local, if you were making bread, you would go and get that little packet of bread yeast, right? Well, what if you created the yeast yourself and it was your yeast? Well, no bread makers do that anymore because it's just very costly and whatever. So this is a wine being made by the same principle. Can we make a wine without any addition of the fermentation or other additives? And this is the experiment with that.
I can't wait to give it a try. I really can.
Hoof and Lure from the Troupas Winery.
Hoof and Lure is the Troupas Winery. Imported through New York. It's supposed to be served chilled.
Yes. Greek wines are generally served chilled.
I will drink it chilled. I did enjoy the many Greek wines I had a chance to test when I was on my honeymoon in Athens. And I must say I'm not a big wine person. I don't know enough about it. Someone puts a glass in front of me and says, try this, and I say, oh, that's tasty, or not my cup of tea. Not my glass of wine. And most of the ones that I tried in Greece I thought were quite good. And I call them easy drinkers.
That's exactly what they are. Unlike many of the, say, the French wines and even many of the American wines now, the really high-end wines, really have to be had with cheese or with fruit or with something, right? Eat it, drink it with something. The Greek wines, because they're a summer wine and it's because it's hot, such a hot climate, you can just sit and sip them on the deck. I mean, they are always going to be refreshing and enjoyable wines. And there's a fair number of the Greek wines. And if we were in Europe, you would see them in every store. You don't see them here in the United States.
But hard to find Greek wine in the United States?
Yes, a little bit.
All right. I feel privileged then. Thank you for coming in on the program. Well, let's start local, and then we'll move on. We'll sort of fan out a bit. But you walked in, and the first thing you said was about the University of Wisconsin putting up 19 flags. No doubt, if in fact the University of Wisconsin put up 19 flags, then those 19 or the 2,996 flags, then 19 of those flags were flags for the hijackers. That's just the way. That's just reality. That's just what it is. And to have them respond to me. When I saw this on their Facebook page, when I called them out on it, and I actually called them out in a way that would have given them an easy out, Jim, which would have been to say, we Googled incorrectly, we made a mistake, we've removed 19 flags, or we mistyped. There aren't actually those 19 flags you're worried about. They're only flags to remember the victims of 9/11. I mean, I gave them an easy out. I gave them the benefit of the doubt to assume that it was simply a Googling error. And instead of just doing that, they essentially ignored the concerns that I expressed and said to me directly on Twitter, we're proud of the student Democrats, Republicans, and veterans who came together to organize this tribute. It's intended to honor the innocent victims and heroic responders who lost their lives on 9/11. Please explain how 19 American flags honoring the hijackers are a way to honor innocent victims and heroic responders who lost their lives on 9/11.
You know, that response. Now, we all both know the he's a good friend, the general counsel at the university, Raymond. Look, that sounds like something that Ray DeFora probably authored, because it's a lawyer's response.
That's a lawyer's response.
Because now you see they're in a problem. They got a problem. They got a problem because they can't just outright say, we are embarrassed, we are upset, we are looking into it, we apologize to anyone we've offended. That's the right answer, right? It's a simple answer. It's straightforward. It admits the mistake. Instead, they leave us all wondering if it was a mistake. Was it really a
right,
mistake?
Right, clear it up. Did you make a Google error?
I mean, maybe they did. They probably did. And maybe somebody else knew that they had, and he let it through because he goes, ha, 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 wait till I get him on this. But now the chancellors of the university ought to be saying, they ought to be calling in. The board ought to say, if you don't apologize, we want the head of the university to come and testify and tell us what happened here. Because we are offended, and we will not have our university honor 19 terrorists. It will not happen
because,
at the University of Wisconsin.
Because this response, which is, as you say, a lawyer's response, doesn't acknowledge that anything has changed.
Yeah,
it doesn't acknowledge that anything has changed. And in fact, the UW Madison Twitter account put this out on Twitter as well. 2,996 flags line Bascom Hill to remember and honor those who lost their lives. 19 of those flags don't belong there.
Yeah, that's,
just say we're sorry and take them down.
Yeah, that's just,
What
kind of a society are we in? What kind of a place is the university that they're worried about offending the three Islamic terrorists on their campus?
No kidding.
I mean,
that's what you're intimating, is that they're afraid now that if they admit the mistake, that there is a contingent of wild ass radicals on their campus that actually like the idea of 19 terrorists being honored with American flags, even though that's probably not true, because if you're actually somebody who's a fan of what Al-Qaeda did, first, you know, go to hell. Second, I don't know if you'd think that American flags, you know, in memory of them is something that would make you feel comfortable, but you're exactly right. They're probably worried they're going to rock the boat with some radical student group.
I mean, maybe the chair of the board or the chair of the committee in the legislature needs to send out a request that they appear before their committee at the upcoming hearing, or appear before the board at the upcoming board meeting, and explain what happened and apologize.
We'll accept that you made a mistake.
But we're not going to sit on a board of trustees. On a board of trustees overseeing a university, thus approving in some sense what they do, without an explanation of honoring 19 terrorists who killed Americans and killed thousands.
And here's what else I would like to know.
Yes.
I would like to know, since they seem to be, you know, leaning on this whole, you know, the unity issue of bringing the College Dems and the College Republicans together, did the College Dems and the College Republicans know that 19 flags were added who could only represent the terrorists? Because I'm going to go down a limb here, and I'm going to say probably not. And I'm going to even give the College Dems credit, because I don't even think the College Dems understood that. And let's face it, most people don't know off the top of their head the number of people who died on 9/11. But I'm going to say it again. It's 2,977.
And somewhere out there on the internet, they have put this other number out there. And so it comes up when you do an internet search, because that's how many people died. Yeah, that's how many people died right directly. This is akin to Ilhan Omar's
some people did some things.
That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? Some people did some things. And I give credit to the university and the Republicans and Democrats for trying to do an honor that y'all screwed it up. Tell them y'all screwed it up so as to continue to make it an honor. You can't do that with a lawyerly statement that we just honored some innocent people. You have got to explain 2,996. You got to explain that number. It's a simple explanation or a simple apology. That's all it is. Do it, because otherwise you don't think what you're talking about is going to go viral, already has gone viral. It's going to be all over the country, that parents and others everywhere in the country are going to read that the University of Wisconsin has honored the terrorists in the same way as those they killed. I mean, you don't think that's already out there, university. You are really insane.
Yeah, that lawyerly response was actually infuriating. How about our bad, really honest mistake here, which I already teed up for them on their Facebook page. I teed up the excuse. We carelessly Googled.
Yeah.
Because you can Google and get the number. You can get 2996 when you Google. If you don't click on the article, there are some articles that pop up, and the first number you're going to see is 2996. I can see people trying to organize this rapidly and making that mistake. But when you don't even acknowledge the error in the first place, that just makes people mad. That just gets people angry.
Well, as I said, I'm sure it has already gone viral this afternoon. It's going to go viral all over the country. I'm just trying desperately to persuade them. Put out another statement and say, our bad. We made a mistake.
Yep.
And if you aren't willing to do that, then I'm going to assume that you've got a whole bunch of faculty members and the like that you're concerned about because they think the terrorists are some people and something happened on some day.
You know, Jim, and that's what I wonder. It's 18 years. It's, I guess, for a lot of people, it's a long time. There are some people.
There are freshmen there that were born after.
After. Yeah. There are plenty of people who have had zero personal experience with. In my generation, it was the event that rocked our generation. I'm not making some kind of unique claim, but when the baby boomers had a whole bunch of different things that they could point to that were critical to their generation, be it the Bay of Pigs or the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. or John F. Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or the Vietnam War. We had one thing. Well, actually, technically, I guess we had two. We had the fall of communism, which was not something that was processed as trauma to my generation. But in terms of trauma, 9/11 was it. So, you know, there's people who are one generation beyond me who have no trauma to report. And I wonder if that now has given way to easy and cheap manipulation. Since I am arguing live in a post-truth world now, is 9/11 part of that post-truth? We're going to come back with that. Jim Troupas is in my studio. We'll be right back.
The views expressed on the following program are not necessarily the views of WIBA, its management, sponsors, or staff. Broadcasting live from Planet Madison, where everything is beyond parody, this is the Vicki McKenna Show. To be a part of the program, in Madison, call 321-1310. Statewide, call toll-free at 877-235-1310. Or email Vicki at WIBA.com. Now, here's Vicki McKenna.
Welcome back to the program, Vicki McKenna Show. Judge Jim Troupas on the program. Still ahead on the show, Kimberly Guilfoyle will join me. She is about to be, go ahead, gavel us in on a metal bottle. I should have given you back the wine bottle. Please don't hit me over the head with that, Jim. It still sounds like we're getting hammered in the studio.
It does.
I've been, not like this is some kind of original thought of mine. Many people have had similar thoughts, but I've just decided to give it a name. And that is, we're post-truth. This is, you know, it emanates out of postmodernism. It emanates out of this intersectional craziness. But we are, when you look at the press, when you look at politics, when you think that there could be some things that could escape the post-truth realm, and then you find they can't. Think of the FDA right now talking about banning e-cigarettes because some people are buying illegal drugs.
Department of Truth.
What the hell?
Isn't that from Orwell? Isn't it Orwell?
Yeah,
Department of Truth?
Maybe that's what we should, you know, start to call this radio program, is the actual Department of Truth. But truth is irrelevant. Dennis Prager wrote an interesting piece at PJ Media yesterday about this, about what the equation of evil is, and it is good intentions minus wisdom equals evil. And that wisdom is where substitute the word truth for wisdom. Good intentions minus truth equals evil. You can, and I don't even give all of these Democratic politicians credit for good intentions necessarily, but I give a lot of other people who might support them credit for good intentions. We have decided to take away the information that people need to make decisions, be it the history textbooks of American public schools. Just saw a story the other day that the most popular textbook taught in American history class is a textbook that essentially recreates Democrats as superheroes, Republican contributions as irrelevant, and essentially describes the United States similar to the way the 1619 Project of the New York Times does, and that is an oppressive, racist society that, you know, that needs constant correction by progressives. So,
have you ever seen the movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
I have not.
Okay, it's a wonderful, wonderful film. And in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and by the way, John Wayne's in it, Jimmy Stewart's in it. There's an incredible cast. And it's really an extraordinary movie. And it's about this guy who ends up, he's the man who shot Liberty Valance. He goes on, becomes a senator. He's going to run for president and does all these things. And then he comes back to his hometown near the end. I won't give away the plot, except that in the end, the newspaper, and it's about a newspaper reporter. So it's written from the standpoint of a newspaper reporter. The newspaper reporter says, near the end, I can't get the exact quote, but he says, when faced with the fact or the myth, print the myth.
Print the myth.
And that was in reference to a politician. It was in reference to this politician had gotten famous for something he'd never done. But faced, given a choice between the fact and the myth, print the myth. And I think that is, and again, the beauty of that movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, is, of course, it's about a different period of time in history, right? But we repeat it. We continue to repeat this. Remember the yellow journalism of the late 19th century. And again, kids at the university don't know this because they don't study history. But, you know, we have been through this before, where the media becomes so biased, so off to one nutcase, that you get this. You get what you have with these Democrat candidates. When faced with the myth or the fact, of course there's climate change. Because it's the myth. It's the myth on which we can build an entire new society in whatever way we wish. Today's story, the story about vaping. You know what I said at lunch today? I said, okay, so vaping is just terrible. It's just horrible. Somebody's going to smoke a cigarette. Let's legalize pot. How about the stories today about all the PTSD, about all the people committing suicide? It's terrible. It's terrible. Terrible. Got to do something about suicide. Let's legalize another drug.
You're right.
So, where people will commit suicide. I mean, you can't debate the statistics on the relationship between smoking pot and suicide. You can't. It's not debatable. I mean, every psychiatrist will tell you, no, it's not debatable. I mean, it may be that they would get there anyway. But let's be clear, the paranoia and the like that one feels.
Especially with the high concentration of right. THC in these new products that people are consuming.
Will kill you.
But we can't, eventually. You know, I will share with you a text that I got on this issue. But again, whatever you think about whether you like it when people vape or not, that's not what we're talking about. But vaping is not killing people. Vaping e-cigarettes, vaping nicotine is not killing people. Using illegal drugs is. But I was texting Ron Johnson about this, and he says, no one will admit that the main problem is THC-based liquids. Too many people have invested in marijuana legalization, and many have invested in marijuana, period.
Yeah, and it's going to be – I mean, look how terrible, terrifying this is for Wisconsin right now. Think about this for a second. I'm sitting in the living room of my son in Naperville, and I opened the Naperville paper. Naperville, the center of the highest concentration of Republicans in the state of Illinois, one of the highest concentrations of Republicans in the country at one time. And the front page article is about whether or not they're going to have recreational marijuana distribution in downtown Naperville. And they will, of course, because the city will get some revenue out of it.
Yeah.
And the state will get some revenue out of it.
But don't talk. You can't say anything about that.
If you don't think that they're going to bring that to Wisconsin, if you don't think that the junior high school kids here in Madison and everybody listening to you, that those junior high kids aren't going to be having THC gummy bears, which is what you can buy in Oregon and Washington, or you don't have to smoke it anymore, if you don't think that's going to be everywhere in Wisconsin, You're the one taking drugs. And here, and we stand by, and we don't say what I heard Brad Schimmel do so well, which is to attack this on every possible level, because it's inevitable. And that's what my son said the other day. It's just inevitable. It was like gay marriage. It was just inevitable. At some point, we tip over the edge where you can't even argue the other side. And here, when you come to these illegal drugs, we're talking about study after study after study. We're not talking about, we have plenty of history here. And then we get to something like vaping, because it happens to be on the front page of the paper, and for some reason, idiots like the mayor of Middleton and what have you, and mayor of Beloit, come up, oh, we'll go after this, and the Democrats will go after this. When it saves...
You're doing nothing.
Saved thousands, tens of thousands of lives. Vaping has saved tens of thousands of lives, because it took them from smoking cigarettes to doing vaping. And they're alive today. Vicky, maybe you're alive today because you've switched from cigarettes to vaping. And we're going to just blithely say, well, we're not going to have that, but let's legalize marijuana for everybody. And we're going to have cafes, and we're going to do this. And we're going to ignore any of the impact of that, as if it just doesn't matter.
Even though the lung diseases and the deaths are due to illicit THC cartridges, we're instead yes. going to pretend that doesn't matter, because a whole bunch of Republicans and a whole bunch of Democrats have dollar signs in their eyes from the revenue that will be generated from the sale of marijuana. At the same time, what they're also not talking about is the money that gets taken out on the backside, increased law enforcement, increased social service needs. You know, but again, we're post-truth, Jim, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. We're not even going to mention that. I was absolutely aghast to see the President of the United States, a guy I voted for and you know, will vote for again, announce that he is going to tee up his FDA secretary to ban flavored e-cigarettes because it's for the kids. You want to save the kids? You want to help the kids? You're going to start putting your foot on this legalization enthusiasm. Because what ends up happening, this ain't your granddad's weed.
And it isn't, isn't your granddad smoking it, guys.
It's not your granddad smoking it. It's a bunch of disconnected, alienated
14-year-olds.
Yeah, kids with, you know, with nihilism in their eyes in some cases, that whose brains have not fully developed, that are going to be impacted by this. But, you know, let's give the impression that we're doing something for the kids by doing absolutely nothing for the kids, but penalizing people who actually need these products because they use them to quit smoking. But again, post-truth. We're post-truth on climate change. We're post-truth on abortion. We're post-truth on socialism and transgenderism.
Yeah, right.
We're just, you know, and to your point about tipping points, are we beyond a point where you can say the emperor has no clothes?
Right.
Are we beyond the point?
I mean, when boys are competing in girls' sports, let me tell you, we have really crossed over into the never land.
Hang on 1 second, Jim Troupas, and I'll be back here in just a moment on the Vicki McKenna Show. I'll be right back. Jim Troupas for one last segment here on the Vicki McKenna Show, and we're talking about post-truth America, post-truth world. You see this going on in Europe as well. It's not just a phenomenon in the United States. It's as if Western civilization has a sickness, a really rapidly advancing virus, and nobody quite knows what to do about it. And it almost looks like, you know, it almost looks like it's just like Ebola, like it is consuming us and we are bleeding. And there doesn't seem to be much to save us from this disease. Well, and this disease is the rejection of God and belief, an embrace of nihilism, a heralding of the ultimate individual self as that which we worship. And it's gotten us to the place where now we have a whole group of people declaring that facts and truth do not matter. It's my facts and my truth, and damn the real facts and the real truth. And that's where we live right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the truck that says I believe I'm a Prius. It is, you were mentioning the great books, these are truly great books that talk about this, Dostoevsky and the like, off the air. And the truth is that every religion, it doesn't matter which religion we wish to choose of the great religions, the religions that have lasted for centuries and centuries, have elements that always intersect. And one of the places that they intersect is that there is truth. That there is truth, that there is a fact. They all accept that there is truth. Now, They may always say there's a greater God and a greater being. All religions say that. But they don't deny the fact of life, and they don't deny our own fallibility as human beings. And that's where I think we've talked about now for 10 years on air about the progressive movement's denial of the fallibility of man, while simultaneously saying all those other people don't know what they're doing. They always think that man holds the answer, that science and man can determine the ultimate fate for all of us, and that will be it. And yet here we have every presidential candidate on the left sounding like they're out of their minds.
Yeah, and rejecting science in the name of science in order to elevate man and their own personal crusades over and above facts and truth, and to hell with it if it destroys this nation or destroys your life, because it's irrelevant to them, and it's irrelevant to the people covering them. It's irrelevant to the press cheerleading them. It's irrelevant to the voters who are out there enthusiastically endorsing them, and it scares the crap out of me.
Well, they can't even agree on that we have a common language. I mean, you know, it's, hi, I'm Jim, he, him. They have to tell you what pronoun they are. I mean, seriously? Seriously? Come on. Now, that's just laughable. I'm sorry, folks. I know if there's...
People take it deadly seriously.
And they do. And I'm sorry. That's laughable in my lifetime. I guess I'm an old guy. I can't take that. That's just silly. The idea that my kids would have to compete, my girls would have to compete against boys in a girls' sport because the guys can't make it in the boys' sport, so they come over here and win my races, that's just plain insane. And I'm with Marina Navratilova on that. And so we have time after time the denial of fact. I always said there's an easy one to think about how truly denial it is. It's like if we tell people they have to pay, if we raise taxes, we'll raise taxes so high no one will buy cigarettes. But if we raise the minimum wage to an outrageous level, people will still get hired.
Of course.
Well, wait a minute. On what planet are you on? Because if one is true, the other is true. We had this. There was a marvelous piece today that Karen pointed out to me, which was an article about Judge Posner. Judge Posner and I have gone at each other a lot over the years. Judge Posner was a famous Seventh Circuit judge, and I appeared before him many times. And I thought he was just one of the worst things. He's a conservative judge, folks. Just remember this. He's very, very, very conservative. He also has no care for the law at all if he thinks he's smarter than you, and therefore he'll just write the law and forget what the lawyers did. He tried to set up a center where they would provide free legal services. It just went out of business. Why? Because everybody said, I'll take them. They're free. Reality is still reality, folks. It's still reality. You cannot choose your own facts. The facts are what they are.
And you can't choose your own truth either.
That's correct.
Because the truth still is the truth. And we may scare people into rejecting it, and we may terrify people because they're afraid of losing their jobs into not acknowledging what the real truth is. It still exists independent of whether you have the guts to say it, whether you'd like to see it erase, whether you want people to call you a pony. It doesn't matter.
You are not a pony.
You are not a pony. And it could get really, really ugly what people are willing to do to each other. On this 9/11, we saw what people were willing to do to each other.
Never forget what happened.
And
never
we'll
forget.
Never forget. And yet,
never forget.
We have people in this nation who seemingly think that they should be able to make the same choices for the rest of us, and even if that means destruction, that the terrorists made for us on September 11th, 2001. And on September 11th, we all came together and said, no way.
It wasn't just some people.
Let's
go for it. I mean,
this
is
together
a day,
again
day to remember.
And
day to
say
remember.
No way. Good to have you on the program, Judge
Good
Jim Troupas.
Always
happy to have you. Coming up, folks, we're going to check in with What's Trending with Mike Pilch. And then after the news break, Kimberly Guilfoyle will join me. She is going to be speaking with the College Republicans at the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus, I believe, tomorrow evening. So Kimberly will join me next. Welcome back to the Vicki McKenna Show. On the phone with me right now is senior Trump advisor, also former Fox News host. Many of you have seen Kimberly Guilfoyle already and are very familiar, but Kimberly is going to be in Madison. Madison, tomorrow, you're a brave lady. Welcome to the program.
I like adventure. What can I say?
I guess so. No, you know, it's better than that. You're not going to be just in Madison. You're going to be in Madison at the University of Wisconsin campus with the College Republicans. I like your boldness. I really do. I wish you the best. You know, please be careful. Please be careful.
That sounds ominous.
So what can we do here on, you know, particularly with the young people, Kimberly? I know that you're going to talk to College Republicans. These are people who they're trying to terrify out of supporting President Trump. You know, what can you do to break through that fear?
You know, and that's the thing. I really want to encourage everybody, especially, you know, the youth of America, to get out there, to get involved, and not to be afraid to use your voice and to have your own personal and political beliefs and not be afraid to express them. So, you know, you can't really say that message, you know, from a bully pulpit across the country. You need to get right down into it. Like, go to every state, meet with as many people as possible. And I feel that's part of my, you know, job, that it's a really good, unique opportunity to reach out and tell them to get involved. And also, you know, so many young people, where we go across the country, John Jr. and I go with our great friend Tony Clark, who runs Students for Trump, and we mobilize and let them know what are the options to get involved, to help with getting out the vote, registering people. There's a lot of exciting things that young people can get involved in, and especially with, you know, with our campaign, with Trump Victory, it's really exciting. We have a tremendous amount of young people involved. Our campaign in particular, our staff is largely women, in fact. So it's been a really unique, you know, experience. And I want to make sure that, you know, every college campus that we go to, that we're touching as many people as possible. And, you know, I think this is a great opportunity to spread the message about the accomplishments of the president, encourage them to get involved. We have a group going, you know, next week that is going to do outreach and getting people to help join and volunteer, you know, with the campaign and with the grassroots effort across this country. And the state of Wisconsin is incredibly important.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to the president. And so that's why, you know, we're going to be there early and often. That, you know, that's our message.
We have the best job market we have had in my recollection. We have the lowest unemployment rate, 7 million jobs unfilled. These are, by the way, these are facts that a lot of people aren't exposed to, Kimberly. You know this, that, you know, if it were left to the mainstream press, none of this information would ever get disseminated. And so, honestly, a lot of what young people can do is be the counter to the lie. You know, talk about the strength of the economy. Explain, if you have to, what the importance of reducing regulation, what that means for a graduating college senior who's going to graduate with a job, you know, with a degree in something useless, but you're still going to get a job paying you $25 an hour when you graduate. There are such positive messages about what's going on and the changes that have taken place that, you know, kind of recasting the face of this movement as young people, as College Republicans, that could be very powerful.
Yeah, it's really true. And that's why, you know, I don't consider any place off limits. I want to go to every single state, and I have been to every state campaigning so far, except like Alaska and Hawaii. Just this week alone, you know, we were in North Carolina campaigning here, like in New York, also in Wisconsin, as you know, tomorrow. And then next week I'll be in New Mexico and California. So, you know, it's really been great to see and meet all of the people across the country, and especially the young people. They get it. They understand it. You know, and really when you show them the juxtaposition of, you know, socialism and the, you know, 20-plus Democrats, so-called Democrats, Democrat socialists running for the presidency, it really presents great options for people to say, which America do you choose? Which America do you want to live in? How about the youth of America? Would you like to continue with a president that has produced, you know, record low unemployment across the board for, you know, all minorities, for Asian Americans, for African Americans? You know, women more employed, gainfully employed than ever before in the workforce. And, you know, just last year alone, 1,800 jobs a day were created by women. Okay, women created, owned businesses. So I think it's exciting. We've got 6.3 million new jobs in this country since President Trump took office. And I think that's a big deal. And you know what it means for people at home? Guess what? Your child's getting an education that's costing some money. They're going to be able to get a job when they graduate. that's the big deal, and that's thanks to President Trump.
Even with one of those degrees like I got in college. You know, otherwise, if it's not the young people correcting the record, Don Lemon's going to get away with saying things like, it's President Obama who is responsible for the record low black unemployment rate. Though Lord knows nobody gets how that's true, because President Trump has been president since 2016. But I like that you're willing to go into the belly of the beast. I like that you're willing to go to California or come to Madison. You mentioned North Carolina. Talk about the media telling the exact wrong story. I don't know if it was wishful thinking. I don't know if it was fake news, but they just flat out got North Carolina in the special election wrong yesterday. North Carolina holds strong for President Trump. I think we're going to see that as well in the special election district here in District 7.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, but we worked tirelessly, and that's how it should be. You got to earn it. And President Trump, nobody works harder than him, you know, so we, Don Jr. and I, were with the president in North Carolina. We both spoke at his rally, as well as the vice president, and, you know, bringing it home for Dan Bishop and Dr. Greg Murphy. And we were just there 2 weeks ago campaigning, doing a number of fundraisers for both of them and mobilizing and get out the vote. I hope that teaches young people of America. It's like, you know what? You can earn it. You can make it happen. You work hard. Take nothing for granted. You know, don't be afraid to, you know, run up the score. Get as many people out to vote as possible. And it just goes to show you, you know, the people who support President Trump, you know, are winning. And that same thing happened in midterm elections. They support the president, the Trump economy, the president's winning agenda as it relates to national security and foreign policy. It's incredible, the number of achievements. You know, finally, we have a president that stands for our flag, that stands for the military, that stands for law enforcement. You know, all the hardworking people across this country that the Democrats took for granted, used and abused them, spent their money recklessly in D.C., paid them no regard. Well, those people are coming over to President Trump, because he's not only just made promises like he did during the election in 2016, he's delivered, kept those promises, and exceeded the expectations. And, you know, the facts speak for itself.
Absolutely. And it's time to start getting the message out there, because if we wait around for the press to do it, it's never going to happen. Kimberly Guilfoyle will be in Madison at the University of Wisconsin campus tomorrow at Science Hall. This is a ticketed event, folks. So if you don't have tickets, this is not one that's just plain open to the public. You need a ticket for this one. Kimberly, thank you for being on my program today. And welcome to
tickets.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. KG at uw.eventbrite.com.
I'm going to make sure I put a link up on my blog to make it easy on people, also on social
Fantastic.
Media. Thank you, Kimberly. I appreciate
it. All right,
thanks for coming to Wisconsin. Folks, this is the Vicki McKenna Show. We're going to take a quick break here. I will be right back to wrap this up.
Madison's greatest hits, Rewind 92.1.
Welcome back to the Vicki McKenna Show. Hey, this just in. First human case of West Nile virus reported in Wisconsin. Woohoo! Hey, use DEET. That's all I have to say. The mosquitoes are still miserable. It's hot. It's muggy outside. Use DEET. There was a movement to ban this stuff. Some of the organic environmentalist types were suggesting that you shouldn't use DEET. You want to know what makes sure mosquitoes won't bite you and give you West Nile virus? There's another weird disease going around as well in the Northeast, and it's some kind of encephalitis. I can't remember what the name of the actual disease is, but mosquito-borne, use DEET. D-E-E-T. I have 92% DEET that I use. Works like a charm. All right. Thank you, Kimberly Guilfoyle, for coming to the program. I'm sincere when I say, I think going to the University of Wisconsin, overtly conservative supporting Trump. I mean, overtly supporting Trump. Kimberly is a senior advisor to the president's campaign. She is overtly, she is there to be for Trump. That is exactly what we need to start doing. Republicans have this habit of going to safe places. Not that we seek safe spaces. That's what the left does. They need their little rooms. They need their whoobies. They need to suck their thumbs. They need their therapy dogs. But we tend to isolate ourselves into safe places. So, hey, we had a Republican event. Let's hold it in Waukesha County. Why Waukesha County? Because it's a WOW County. WOW counties are safe. We've got a Republican event. Let's hold it in the Fox Valley. The Fox Valley is safe. And it's very frustrating. You're never going to make any kind of inroads into areas that have been that the liberals have attempted to wall off, like Dane County, unless you first go there. It was one of the great complaints that a lot of people at the sort of county level, local level, had about Republicans and the black vote, because the candidates reckoned, since the liberals had, you know, for all intents and purposes, walled off the black vote for Democrats, well, why are we going to waste our time? We have precious time and precious resources. Meanwhile, people working at county Republican parties were saying, you know, in Milwaukee or in Madison are saying, you know, we could sure use some help here, but you guys keep telling us that we don't matter and you can't invest your time in our areas. Well, notice what happened to Madison. Madison now is 100% controlled by left-wing groupthink. Even moderate Democrats are afraid to pop their head above the line of the gopher hole because they're afraid that the progressive left is going to whack them upside the head if they dare say anything that amounts to sounding more in line with common sense and the radical progressive vision that the left has for Madison. Why did that happen? That happened because the GOP took its hands off of the areas in Wisconsin that were not considered good investments. Now, that's changed, folks. That has changed. By the way, when Reince Priebus was running the Republican Party, we didn't really have that big of a problem with this. He was somebody who believed in, at the very least, making investments in the areas where we were not strong, in the parts of Wisconsin where we were not strong, in order to try to increase our strength through force multiplication. That went away for a time. Now that sensibility appears to be back, and we need to actually begin to start speaking out in a way that allows us to be recognized not as the monsters, not as the caricature monsters that people like Brandy Grayson have described us, or the people like the Freedom Inc. people have described us, or the people like the national press have described us. Stand up and announce yourself. It takes courage in the beginning. The left wants to make everybody terrified about pulling out a red hat or putting a bumper sticker on the back of your car. But you know what? There's an active and flourishing chapter of University of Wisconsin College Republicans every single day have to live their lives with derision and that and the kinds of verbal assaults that you and I occasionally run into from time to time. And they do it. Surely we can. Kimberly Guilfoyle does not have to go to the University of Wisconsin. She does not have to come to Madison, Wisconsin. Donald Trump does not have to come anywhere near Madison, Wisconsin, but she's going to Madison. Capacity building. Force multiplication. I applaud the Trump campaign for dispatching Kimberly to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I applaud the University of Wisconsin-Madison CRs for having the balls to face the kind of hatred that you and I only ever read about or only have to experience occasionally, pretty much every day. They stand, they are counted, they're fearless, and it's a lesson for the rest of us. I am out of time, everybody. I'll see you all on tomorrow's program. This is the Vicki McKenna Show. Have a great night.